but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Our next guest has range. I think it's the best way to put it. John Papadakis, former linebacker, football player at USC. Also, guy operated and owned restaurants, and he likes to sing. He's a people person. John Papadakis has some pipes.
When the sun is high in the afternoon sky, you can always find something to do. But from dusk till dawn, as time moves on, something happens to you.
Ba-dum, bum, bum. He's got pipes. He's joining us now, the singing linebacker, John Papadakis. How are you, man?
Good, Johnny. Thank you very much. What's happening, man?
I hear you got a gig coming up. We want to talk about this.
I do. It's at a place called Alva's. It's a performance center. And it's in good old San Pedro, the city seaside soul, the oldest settled community in Southern California. My family's been here 110 years.
Man.
We got something to sing about after all that time, right?
I like it. Does anybody else in your family sing, or are you the only singer? Because I know Petros, obviously, from people know Petros from Fox and FS1 and ESPN and his days, obviously, calling football games. He's on the big stage. But anybody else a singer or performer in the family?
Actually, the reason I'm singing on stage is because of my youngest son, Demetrius, who played football at UCLA. Briefly, but he got some in a freeway wreck, which stopped his playing. But he had a great deal of he was probably the best athlete of all the boys. He had speed and power. And anyway, I don't want to get lost in that. Anyway, he said, a few years ago, he said, let's join the choir, maybe 8 years ago at church. And I've always loved the music in the Greek Orthodox Church. The Divine Liturgy just goes right up to heaven. It's all because it's praising, you know, the Lord all the time. And anyway, it's very mystical and beautiful. And so we said, yeah, let's join the choir, which we did. Well, he ended up becoming the chanter in the church, the main cantor, so to speak. And I ended up on stage, you know, doing jazz shows. So it's a good idea.
I love it. I want to go back to 1968. You're athlete of the year at Rolling Hills High School. High school football player. You were all state. You were all American. You also played baseball and track. You were recruited by how many schools? Like, you had like 50?
Every major coach of that era sat in my mother's and father's living room. And it was a great experience, you know, and I wanted to meet him because I so loved college football. At that time, only one game was on a week. ABC had a weekly game, and the whole nation would watch two teams play. It was very intensive. For a young guy like me, it's where my heart was because my father loved football and played it as a young man, even from a Greek immigrant family, and not a big guy, but a tough guy. So, you know, somehow the things that really please your father and the things that he reaches for in his own heart, you know, you want to support too. You want to become that so he'll love you more. It fathers inspire young men to play.
I love that. John Papadakis, our guest. The people that sat in the living room at USC, who showed up from USC, and who showed up at other colleges that you remember recruiting you?
Well, Tommy Prothrow from UCLA, the Jim Owens from Washington,
mm-hmm.
Woody Hayes, he loved linebacker fullback type, which what I, you know, that's what I played. He loved that. He would have had a whole team of linebacker fullback. To him, that was the center of the action, and that's what he loved more than anything. Somebody who would tackle and somebody who would block. Anyway, it was a glorious era. You know, what was great about it is a lot of the San Pedro is about 20 miles from downtown L.A. And it's a few miles from the west side where all the hot restaurants are and everything. So, you know, they'd want to take you out to dinner. They'd visit the house and say, where can we go and eat? My father had a great friendship with the Trainee family, which just celebrated 100 years in the restaurant business in San Pedro. That's how prolific they are. And they loved sports, and they grew up with my father. They were sports-loving families, just like my father's family was. And I would take them to Trainees. And they developed deep relationships because there was a guy recruiting me from Stanford named Dick Vermeil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there were other guys who went on to become great coaches in other venues. Who was the Washington coach who won all those Super Bowls with John Ridden?
Gibbs, Joe Gibbs?
Yeah, he came down to the house, you know. And so there were many assistant coaches who ended up becoming more famous than the prominent college coaches of that time who visited the house. Anyway, everybody loved Eddie Crowder from Colorado.
Yeah.
He visited the house. I had one guy, Colorado wanted me so bad, they sent a guy named Rick Duvall. He ended up proposing to my cousin, Kay. and then he even allowed me to take a girl that I was crazy about in high school to on the recruiting trip with me.
Oh, wow.
Asked me what she liked, and I said she liked cowboys and horseback riding. We were met. The airplane was met at the airport with a cowboy with two horses. He put her on the horse and took her away.
Oh, wow.
I didn't see her again until we left. The Sunday that we left. And her freshman year, she went to Colorado, by the way. I guess she fell in love with a cowboy. And guess who proposed to her freshman year?
Who?
Rick Duvall, the coach.
They got her. They didn't get you.
Let's face it. They were very committed to their work.
There you go. John Papadakis with us, former USC linebacker and singer. Now, I want to stay in your college years here just for a second because, you know, obviously you're the co-author of a book called Turning of the Tide. It's really about USC and Alabama, but it's more about sort of changes that were happening in the country. You know, Bear Bryant at the time is playing USC in Birmingham in September of 1970. Racial integration is long a thing of the past by then in the NFL. This is 1970. But you've got, you know, Sam Bam Cunningham, who ran all over Alabama. And he was a Birmingham native who was playing for USC. That was your teammate.
Yeah, Clarence. Clarence Davis, the tailback, was from Birmingham.
Yeah, there you go. Clarence Davis and Sam Cunningham. They ran all over. But Clarence Davis, you were on that team. What was that like to be?
Well, I was a defensive captain, and I was responsible to keep everybody together. We had a great defense. We called ourselves the Wrecking Crew, and they didn't make a meaningful first down. They in the first half, they couldn't move the ball. Got some defensive honors for playing that game. And Sam certainly ran over by them, through them. What the substance of the game was that they wanted to play it under the radar. They didn't want to play the race card. It was the ultimate race card game, yet not played as such. It was played just quietly. It wasn't even on television. And they wanted the fans down there to be exposed to a black and white team, USC, an integrated team, fully integrated. We had went down there with about 18 black players on our roster. And to see the harmony of, they had to understand that we were taking showers with these, you know, with each other. We were straining sweat. We were hugging. We were, et cetera. We would do what football players do. We were together. And we weren't defined by black and white. We were defined by cardinal and gold. Mm. Those were our colors. We were devoted to the tradition and the ritual of USC football, which was colorblind. Our first All-American at USC was a guy named Bryce Taylor, and he was a black man with a withered arm, if you can believe that. Back in the 20s, he played for a famous coach called Howard Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Very famous USC football coach. Probably the most famous until John McKay came along. Anyway, the wink-wink arrangement between Southern coaches, which kept the blacks out of their off their rosters, was that they were falsely characterized as quitters. But if you hit them hard enough, they'd give up. They'd fumble, they'd give up, etc. They didn't have the character to play that gentry class game that the Tennessee or Alabama or Mississippi boys play. Well, Sam ran over by and threw them like they were white ghosts, and he dispelled that theory completely. So they all had to let their guard down and be colorblind. And interesting, the game happened in 1970, and it opened the doors for them. And by the end of that decade, the 70s, Alabama had the greatest decade in college football history with black players, won three national championships. And I took a look at a Alabama roster team photo. 1980, they had 18 blacks on the team, the exact number that we went down there with in 1970. Isn't that interesting?
So Clarence Davis and Sam Cunningham, you have an all-black backfield. And
well, Sam didn't start the game. Charlie Evans was our starting quarterback.
Okay.
But Sam was inserted and just, you couldn't take him out because he was electrified. You know, he ran over by and through him. They couldn't stop him. They had no one who wanted to stop him.
Were you guys aware at that time, John, that this was a significant moment and there was a racial element to it? Or are you just playing football and that's obvious to everyone at the end of the game?
Some of my teammates, keep in mind, this was an era long before they had, detection devices that you had to walk through before you went on an airplane. Some of my teammates took weapons. There were guns. There were knives. And it was for protection because people were getting blown up in Birmingham and Tuscaloosa and places down south. I mean, it's changed completely now. But, you know, there was a lot of fear and danger, especially amongst the black players on the team. So they took defensive. They were thinking defense all the way, and they took weapons to defend themselves in case they had to, but no intention of using it and not wanting to use it. Maybe they didn't even know how to use it.
Yeah.
But that's the degree to which they were concerned. So I can't think of anything, you know, anything that could be said that's a more drastic situation than when a teammate, you know, revealed the fact that he had a gun, which happened to one of my teammates, John Vella, who recently passed away, was a great All-American and a great tackle for the Oakland Raiders during their glorious era.
Does Clarence Davis, a Birmingham kid, does he take extra satisfaction because he could not, he probably wanted to suit up at Alabama, but he knew he couldn't play. That was an all-white team at the time, 1970.
Clarence was a real tough type guy. He wasn't just a city sprint champion. He was the city shot put champion, too. So he was all around. He took a giant knife. He took a hunting knife. The thing was as big as a folder, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
He had problems hiding it. Anyway, he was a serious guy about football. You know, he was methodical and very tough. You could hit him, try to knock his head off, and he'd come right back at you.
Was the thinking that there would be a riot or the crowd, or what were they worried about?
Coach Bryant had sent a message to our team. In the spring, he sent this, because we were told about this game. You see, that particular year, the NCAA allowed an 11th game, and that's how the game came into being. Couldn't have been planned in advance, because Alabama and USC would never schedule each other as the first game. So it was done on the fly. And everyone was surprised by it. So McKay, you know, informed us that we'd be going to Birmingham for the first game. We thought our first game was going to be, you know, something in the Coliseum against a lame duck that we could beat the hell out of and laugh. We were going down there to that, you know, hotbed of Southern hospitality. What can I say? Mm. You know, Alabama's special place, and they have their own way of life, their own culture. So we were very concerned, and there was a lot of talk and unrest amongst the players, especially the black players going down there. And there were a lot of meetings. Ultimately, I asked my teammates, because I was the defensive leader, defensive captain, to, you know, make the statements with your shoulder pads and your helmets. At that time, we were encouraged to play with our helmets and our shoulder pads,
sure,
knock the hell out of each other. And what they call targeting now was glory then.
Yeah. Different time, different era. John Papadakis, former USC linebacker with us, the singing linebacker. We'll get to the singing in a second. You were a Southern California kid, a San Pedro kid, who stayed in Southern California to play at USC. In recent years, we have seen kids from Southern California go to Oregon or go to the SEC or other Big Ten schools. Seems like some of that's coming back. Where do you stand right now with how Lincoln Riley and USC are doing?
Well, it haven't given much hope. There's no more Rudies. You know, there's no more stories about loyalty to a ritual and a tradition and a development and a program. It's pay to play now. And marriages that are only for money don't normally go well, do they? I mean, look at the Pac-12. Everybody left for money, right? They didn't leave for any other reason.
True.
They left for money. And who comes and goes now, it's all about money. So the factors that were alive and well when I played, the sense of conquest that USC had, you know, there has to be a remake. And culture has to be created again. And culture runs deep. It's hard just to recreate. So we've been mediocre for a couple of years now. Would you call us any better than mediocre?
No. And I think Caleb Williams probably hid some flaws in Lincoln Riley's first year.
We hired an air raid coach.
Yep.
At the end of an air raid era. And a school that's made its greatest triumphs and with ground warfare can't keep its feet on the ground.
Yep.
Our defense, which Pete Carroll was and John McKay were famous for, is on the other side of the stats. So, you know, we've got a lot of work to do, and there's people reach for traditional Trojans and people who love USC. They reach, but they can't reach back to that, you know, and grab anything solid right now. And that's a concern. I don't know what to think. If they have a great season, I'll be the first to say congratulations and thank you. But right now, I don't expect much, because it's what's up front that counts, and we don't play ball on the line of scrimmage. We play like to play on the perimeter. The great teams play between the hash marks. And they make you play even between the hash marks. You know, it was interesting. You remember the last, didn't Notre Dame play for the national championship last year?
Yeah, Notre Dame, Ohio State.
That first drive that Notre Dame made, I thought that they were going to kill their quarterback going up the middle all the time.
I know.
But through their will, they made it into the end zone. They couldn't keep it up. But that's college football. Watch an Army-Navy game, you know, when I played, that's college football. The game would last 2.5 hours, and there'd be guys who carried the ball 30, 40 times. And it seems that the teams that are still proficient are able to play that way, are able to possess the ball and wear the other teams down. So if when I start seeing that at USC, I'll be excited.
John Papadakis will be appearing and performing Friday, July 25th at 7 o'clock at Alva's Showroom in San Pedro, California. If you want to get tickets, alvasshowroom.com. It says John Papadakis and Friends here, but what's on the, you got a set list yet? Or you know what you're going to sing, or you're going to bring back the classics? What are you going to do?
I'm going to blast them. I'm going to make it an upbeat kind of, you know, a beautiful summer feeling to it. I have an original song, which was the name of my third album called Being by the Sea. I'm going to do that number. The song is You. You know who wrote the song is You, Jerome Kern. Just in Time by Julie Stein. Yeah. Remember the song More?
More.
More than the greatest love the world has known. You know that song. April in Paris, Lucky to Be Me, Laughing at Life. That's an old Billie Holiday song. It's a great blues song. And you know what I'm excited about? I'm going to do the Jet song.
Okay, sing it. Sing it for us.
You're a jet all the way from your first cigarette till your last dying day. It's a great song from West Side Story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to sing Mac the Knife, too. And even the Disney song, When You Wish Upon a Star. A lot of almost all of these songs I have, you can find them on Spotify or iTunes, YouTube. I'm on all those music services.
And we listen to John Papadakis in our household. Our kids listen to you, John. And, you know, I appreciate when you send me a CD or a link to Spotify and you go, hey, I got a new song out. I love it, man. I love that you're doing this. How old are you?
75.
75,
I'm in the old folks home, for crying out loud.
Well, I love that you're getting on stage. I love you're doing new things. I love that you're doing some old things. You're bringing joy to people. You make people smile with singing. Why don't you take us to commercial break with one of your songs? And this is, again, John Papadakis. If you want to get some tickets for July 25th, it's a Friday night at 7 o'clock in San Pedro, California. You go to alvasshowroom.com. Take us to break, John Papadakis.
Being by the sea always sets my spirit free. Trim your sail and see, let your soul take flight. Thank you, Johnny.
I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you for coming on. Leave it here. You got the Bald-Faced Truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network.